Would you introduce yourselves, please?
My name is Kevin. I play the drums.
Ryan, I play the guitar.
My name is Runner. I play the singing and some keyboards.
Hi, my name's Seb. I play bass.
Either make a part of it or give me a revisionist history in a minute or less. And what I want you to do, and you can do a revisionist history. That'll work just fine. So I'm going to hand you the microphone, and what I want you to do is each of you take a part of it. We'll do Mad Libs.
All right. Well, I met, this is Roner speaking, I met Kevin in the Bahamas in 1989. We were on our respective family vacations, and we met at one of those shacks that you see in the movies that are on the beach that have cocktails, and we were drinking them. Because the drinking age there is like 4, I think. Ryan?
And then I think, what was it? You found a portal to another world, and you stuck your hand through. And I was playing guitar, and I think you maybe like grabbed it and pulled me through. So the portal happened, and then we were together, and then...
And then Ryan pulled us back into his land, and we... Flash forwarded like
we flash forwarded like 12 years, and then we all went out to Applebee's one night, and Seb was our host, and we were like, dude, you play bass while you're hosting, that's pretty impressive. So yeah, it's because he slap bassed his way to show us our seat. So we were like, dude, you should slap bass in our band. And so he did, and the rest is history.
Your bio makes a lot about the last record on that last label not being satisfying because, quote, you were going in so many directions. Was it that the last record didn't work for you and you say you were going so many directions because it was that you were growing and trying to figure out what you wanted to do?
I think that's exactly what it was, is we were in a growing process, and by the time the album finally came out with the label, we were sort of like really, really ready to make the next thing that defined who we were at the time. And then we found ourselves sort of like fulfilling obligations of, cause you know, we're like, you know, we want to work hard and like do the right thing and like,
tour
and like pay our dues and then make the next record. And we just,
we got bogged down in doing all that. And you know, because of the, like, we self-released the record on our own, and then, you know, it just took, that record had several tiers of releases, you know, and so the touring and release process lasted for 3 years, and that was a long time to be, you know, living with one record. It was way too long. So by the end of that, by, you know, third year, we were more than ready to move on.
Post-industrial blackened romantic gaze. Can I get that on the salmon and the whitefish?
I was just sort of trying to figure out what it was, because it was such a stew of like different things, and it was definitely influenced by a lot of I guess 80s and early 90s sounds and things like that. But it wasn't. I didn't think super derivative or intentionally sort of like crafted to be reminiscent of those things. It wasn't like let's like remake this Duran Duran record or whatever.
I do think it would be. I always interpreted Ryan's many hyphenated phrase, what is it, post-industrial black and romantic is, to be slightly wry. Not, you know, I think it's coming across to some people as like, we play this and listen to how important it sounds. It's not really like that. It's just kind of, we were kind of like, oh, that's kind of funny, and it's a little bit true. Yeah, so, you know, like, you know.
I mean, if people, you know, like, if they really wanted, we would sit here and wax on about, like, what we thought we sounded like. And we're not going to be evasive about that. But this is a more terse way to get that done.
You did work with this pretty darn good producer in Mr. JJ, as I've now renamed him, Mr. Justin Meldal Johnson. And I suppose with his pedigree, you were going out. I mean, when you pick a producer like that, and you know the guy's also going to be playing bass more than likely on your session. I read that you sat down with him, and versus talking about genres or influences, you kind of talked to him about sounds.
What we talked with Justin about wasn't like, dude, we want to make a record that sounds like, you know, 1982 post-punk, or that sounds like hard new wave or whatever. We talked about like, hey, do you know this one song by Gary Numan, like that one, that synth that sounds like that, we think that's rad, or like this drum sound on this Harvey Milk record is huge.
We had this, like, the conversations like Roner was describing, we had a series of conversations like that with Justin. Those went on throughout the course of the making of the record, but we didn't, you know, it wasn't like we had a genre in mind, and from that sprang our post-industrial black and romantic gaze genre that sort of just like it. And we didn't, it wasn't like we arrived at this genre and then went and recorded. It was like we had a good idea of what we wanted to do, and then we went into the studio and crafted it, and you know, we went in with certain intentions and came out with a record.
You made the record first, and then you went label shopping, which is kind of an interesting, you know, not that many people can get away with that.
I mean, Dangerbird, we've been working with them in a management capacity for several years now. So we have, you know, we're very close with them. And then Justin as well is on their management roster. That's sort of how we got to know him and work with him. So it was very natural for Dangerbird to hear the record first. And they listened to it to examine it and think about what labels they wanted to shop it to, and they took a listen, and then they called us and said they weren't going to bother shopping it, they just wanted to sign us. So we were happy about that.
The record is basically just out. So is it fun to tour behind music that people might be theoretically hearing for the first time? Like, so is it kind of interesting to be playing to audiences, except obviously that audience when you play in Los Angeles where they're hanging on every single word and track, but when you come even up here, the audience is probably, if they're lucky, they've heard the few tracks that I've played. So what's that like? Is that kind of a cool thing to really like be able to like beta test the songs this early on?
Yeah, it is actually. It's a pretty exciting feeling, especially after you know, our last touring experience having been playing songs that were 4 or 5 years old and that we've been playing for ever and ever. So it is exciting. It's a little scary sometimes, and we're still sort of figuring out how to play everything, but yeah, it keeps everyone really awake. We in the band keeps us very awake on the stage, so that's good.
We kind of took a little bit more of a relaxed attitude, even though we have much more gear to like set up, which is stressful. I mean, but at the spur of the moment, we brought along our friend Aaron, not at this show, but he'll join us for a week coming up, and he was with us for the other Southern California shows. He plays the sax, Barry and Alto, so he's able to like do some of the things on the album live, and that's been cool. I mean, it was just decided like last week that he would do it, so we're able to sort of like have fun with it and try and...
From all the touring and, you know, just the time, we've all become more confident as musicians and more our facility with our instruments and with general technology for making music has increased. And so we're more comfortable in that respect on stage now. And so it's not the nervousness of performing well doesn't come into play so much now. It's more we can kind of like enjoy springing something new on the people. And it's great for us to be able to play something fresh. It's nice to have that change.
I think what must be interesting for you about this is that getting beyond the buzz. Is that part of the joy for you? Is that, you know, when you're there, everybody's like, yeah! But this is now the true test of the band comes out, right?
Definitely. It's kind of like being an explorer, like being on the road, because you never really know what you're going to find at the next town when you show up. It could be 5 people, or it could be 20 people, or 100 people, and it's sort of like you sort of realize that whatever gets written, not whatever, but like, you know, the buzz is buzz sometimes, you know, and it's how you find out if you have the metal to like have longevity as a band, I feel like, is by like what you're willing to, the effort that you're willing to put into touring and like to show up at rooms and like play and give it your all.
We do a thing called a musical sandwich. I've done this with over 300 bands in the past 5 years. So we take 2 of your songs as the bread, and then you each get to pick a few songs by anybody you want in the Western world.